and welcome to the 101st episode of the GAK Guitar Shop podcast, or the first episode in the second series. I am your host, Joe Brandon, who is joining me today.
Hello, my name's Matt, and I am the manager.
Hi. I'm Jay, and I'm here. I'm the assistant manager.
Is it okay that I've done it that way round?
Yeah, I mean...
Would you rather I did it the other way around?
No, I think that's fine.
Oh, sweet.
I didn't say store then, I just said I'm the manager. I could be the manager of anything. I could be the manager of the moon.
And there it is. So,
I've become the new Joe.
Yeah.
So, gentlemen, how is it going? How has your week in the shop been?
I've not been in the shop. I've had a week off this week.
That's
I've
true,
come in have. Especially for this.
That's really considerate. I'm
I know.
Very appreciative of that.
Good.
And I have done a lot of guitar playing.
Yeah, have
you
had anything new and interesting?
You've not been missing me.
Oh, no, I've just been playing at home.
Oh, okay.
Have we had anything new and interesting in the guitar shop?
We got a 74 Telecustom, an original one.
Yeah,
it's very nice.
Saw that. That looks pretty wicked.
Probably the most popular item, the JCM 800. What year? Did we find out what year it was?
85.
85.
Yeah, that's
master volume. It is so loud, it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
I mean, I was going between 0 and 0.5, and it was still too loud.
Immense. I notice on the bass front, we've also got one of the VB4s, the Ampeg VB4s, the 100 watt version of the SVT Classic.
I might buy that.
I think it's an absolutely brilliant amp. 100 watts isn't quite loud enough for me, but...
100 watts valve, though. Like, surely in terms of comparing it with solid state, it's got to be...
Oh, yeah, it's still
loud.
Really loud.
I mean...
Difficult if you need cleans. And it's not that I'd need a clean sound, it's just that my band play quite loud, so it would be very driven. And I do need sometimes... slightly
one thing difference. I've always wanted to do is take something like that JCM and plug it into two 4x12s and then just turn it up as loud as it would. Like that time we had the Doug Aldridge thing.
Yeah,
we plugged that Plexi in and it got to about 7 and it was too loud.
Well, that was really interesting because that was the time we did an event with Doug Aldridge, and we thought there'd be too many people to do it in the shop, so we did it in the club down the road. And we just took a couple of extra 4x12s and heads there just to sort of dress the set more than anything. And someone went, can you plug that white one in? That looks really good. And he went, yeah, sure, whatever, I'll plug the white one in. And he turned it up and it like was just too loud. And we went, oh man, let's unmic it so that it's not too loud. And he went, oh, it's not mic'd up, mate. Just the other, it was so much louder than everything else. And sometimes you just get those there, don't you?
Yeah. That was awesome, though. It's, you just, even in here, you just don't get a chance to turn a Plexi amp up.
No.
Amazing.
See, I'd kind of like to turn a twin up full, see what happens.
Oh, I had a twin, and I turned it up full once. And then I realised it was too loud, so
now
I
have tinnitus.
Yeah.
Speaking of events, we're kind of coming round to that time of year where we're going to be booking lots of events. We've got a few things coming up soon. We've got some acoustic events coming up at the moment.
Patrick Eggle.
We've got Patrick Eggle.
The legend, the man.
Yeah, the guy who designs all the guitars for Faith.
Faith, yeah.
That's pretty cool. Having the actual fella in is pretty amazing.
Won't this podcast have gone out by the time we've done that event, though?
That might well be true.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the event's on Thursday.
Well, we still have other acoustic events. We've got the Martin Lee, I tell you what,
that Patrick Eggle event we did last Thursday.
That was great.
Wasn't it good?
Really
wasn't it?
Patrick Eggle. Great.
Smart fella. Really,
fella.
Like, really, really smart fella.
I mean, essentially, we'll be done.
I think we should knock that one on there.
But the Martin restringing event, we've got that coming up.
Yeah. Little day, come down, get a restring, bring your Martin.
I think that's a really cool way. It's a really nice thing of Martin to kind of do. It's slightly different from the kind of traditional event as such.
Yeah. I think sometimes as well, sometimes you've got a guitar, you might not necessarily, you know, not everyone steps foot in a guitar store like every week. And sometimes you might have had a guitar for a few years, maybe you've played it, maybe you change your strings like once a year, come in, you go, oh, actually, do you know what? Like, you might play something new and be like, oh yeah, I haven't really played another guitar. And then you might find something else. And, you know, I've heard successes of people coming in and being like, oh, I just got this acoustic, restring it, and then actually think, oh, maybe I should go for something else, or, you know, just trying what's out there, because you might not be in the world of guitars or keep up to date as we do.
Yeah, I mean, it's explain to me the nature of the event. Is it completely free then to get your instrument restrung?
As far as I think Dan, who does our acoustic department, has been sorting out some of the details. But yeah, I think it's just a case of come down, bring your acoustic, and someone from Westside, I think.
Does it only be a Martin?
No, I think it can be any guitar. It would be Martin's strings that they're using.
Really? Well, that's cool. I don't know. I assumed it would just be people who've got Martins.
They have to be acoustic, though, I think.
Yeah.
Unless you want to put acoustic strings on your electric.
I would not do that.
I would not advise it.
Don't do that.
But a wonderful opportunity to come down and get your guitar professionally restrung. It's on a Sunday in late March, I think March 22nd. I'd have to double check. That's probably not a Sunday.
Or a day.
Yeah, or even a day. That's probably not a day. There are 20 days in March. Anyway, moving on to the subject for the podcast this week. We've had lots of questions on the Guitar Nerds podcast group.
Question one, where's Mark? Question two, when's Mark coming back?
Those were all the questions. I've filtered those out of our Facebook group. So facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. Let's start at the beginning. So we've got a question from Matt, who said, wondering...
You could just ask us.
I know, every time...
He likes to go through the sort of digital medium.
Right, okay. Yeah,
cool. I like to write things down.
Okay, gotcha.
So Matt says, just wondering if anyone has any thoughts on the Superchamp X2 as a home practice amp. I'm using an old Marshall ValveState 20 watt, I think, that's a bit uninspiring in terms of tone and flexibility. Would this be a good step up? I'm looking for something that I can mess around with across a lot of styles, probably not metal. Looking for a great sounding amp that keeps me coming back. Matt Knight.
Superchamp X2 is a good one, actually, because they're valve preamp. Are they full valve or are they valve preamp?
I think they're full valve.
I think they're full valve. I think
they've got
a 6v6 in. So they're digital modelling, they've got a valve power stage. So you get the warmth and kind of natural dynamics of a valve amp, but you've got 16 different preamps to choose from. So you can go from super tight clean to really heavy distortion. Plus, I think 12 digital effects on there as well. And
something
they're really
like
diddy as well.
They are very small.
Yeah. So, I mean, the valve states were a staple classic in the Marshall lineup for somewhat of the early mid to late 90s, early 2000s.
I think the phrase that Matt uses sums it up fantastically. They are a bit uninspiring.
I mean, at the time, amazing.
At the tone.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, the Superchamp is an excellent example.
Either that, I mean, that's that one, or I would say, I mean, I really like the Blackstar, like the ID15 TVP, which we've been through before, which has the true valve power. But the Superchamp actually has the proper valve in it, so you do get a little bit more dynamics. Vox VT20.
I mean, that's VT20, VT40.
It's been overlooked.
I mean, again, they're kind of more along the lines of the valve state, though. They're more. I mean, if you're looking for something with great tone, then I think
that's the thing.
That.
I think you can set the Superchamp up more like just a simple amplifier and not have to worry about effects or anything if you don't want to. Whereas if you go for a Vox or you go for one of the Blackstars, you're kind of just getting an updated valve state in a way, in the sense of that it's got all of that on it, and it can be a bit daunting to have all those controls, where the Superchamp is kind of like, what sort of preamp do you want? Do you want clean or distorted? And then you can just kind of tailor it from there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they do a little extension cab as well. I think you can have like a little mini stack.
Well, I mean, they definitely do a head version, a head and cab. I guess you could just hook it up as an extension. Yeah.
Not 100%, but they do a head, which is quite good because you could take it to rehearsals or something as well.
Yeah,
that is pretty good. I mean, I assume when Matt mentions flexibility, that he means some inbuilt effects.
Rather than it being flexible.
Yeah, rather than it being wobbly.
Build up.
Like a Rolf Harris wobble board. But I mean, because otherwise I'd be...
USB out as well. These.
That's pretty good.
Are they?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think otherwise I'd be mentioning things like the AC4. And stuff like that.
I mean, personally, I think the AC4s sound like a better amp, the Vox AC4.
Well, absolutely.
But they are
sacrificing
effects. Yeah, of course you are. Yeah. You're sacrificing pretty much everything except for the one sound that does, which is, you know.
Because I was talking to someone today, like, I just want like a 15 watt valve amp for home use. And rather than just going, oh, well, Blues Junior. I was like, well, Blackstar HD20. Like, if you want
a great amp.
Because if you want a full size amp that's going to be sound good at home volumes, and you were thinking about spending a little bit more. Because I think the Superchamp's like 330,
something like that.
330, yeah. So they're only an extra like £120.
That's pretty good. What about the Fender Vaporizer?
The Fender Vaporizer, I don't really think is a particularly home use amp.
I mean,
think
despite, what is it, 14 watts, 12 watts, something like that?
So loud.
They
it's
are
so
loud. Astonishingly
the
loud.
Thing is, they don't make it clear what the Vaporizer button actually does.
Yes, I think this is, for anyone who doesn't know, I think you should explain what the foot
so you've
switchable
got,
option
you've
does.
Got three, you've got three controls on the amp.
Volume,
wait, is it four controls?
No, volume, tone and reverb.
Volume, tone and reverb, and you have a foot switch. So it's a single channel amp. What's the logical thing for that? If those three controls, what's the logical thing?
I think
for
I'll step on this foot switch and turn the reverb off.
No, it doesn't do that. What do you reckon? I mean, maybe, I guess, you know, you do get those Vox amps that don't have a tone control. So does it do that? It does not, which leaves you with the only other option. It bypasses the volume control and it just whacks the volume control up to 10. Now, it sounds incredible, but they are so loud.
Which means you have a 14-watt amp on full volume.
Yeah, and I mean, they do. They sound great and they look great, but you do have... They're difficult to get sounding good at a low volume, I think.
We had someone with their first Facebook post on our group last week talking about a Surf Green Stratocaster and one of the Surf Green Vaporizers.
Yeah.
Had a picture of it up. I thought that was a stunning combination.
Great. I reckon it'd be great in the studio if you got a chance to turn them up. And actually, you can turn the volume all the way down and turn the reverb all the way up and sound still comes through. It still filters through. So you get this kind of like 100% wet, splashy spring sound, which is quite cool.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts. Right, moving on. We've got Corey who says, caution. This is slightly gross, and on the Facebook group, he attached a picture here, but he said, I have a black build-up of muck on the majority of my frets. Number one, what's the best way to clean this off? And number two, is this normal, or should he be seeing a doctor?
do you know what I used recently, which I think one of the guys actually put on the Facebook group, which is something new that we've got here?
Specifically, this was a rosewood board in the case of this.
Yeah, so, I mean, one thing I always use, just to start it off, old toothbrush. Old hard brush toothbrush. Yeah, because it gets in between the frets quite nicely.
I think that's one of the biggest problems, isn't it? That getting the grime.
Well, because I think
right
sometimes if you just put lemon oil on a rosewood board and it's really grimy, you're not really sometimes you're not cleaning much of the actual like grime off.
Yeah.
You're just sort of lacquering the grime.
So you can use really fine wire wool, or we've got this stuff here called a Gorgomite. Has a picture of a dragon on the front of it.
It does sound like a bad guy from... What was the bad guy from the Smurfs called?
I don't know.
Gorgomite.
It was Gorgon something, I think.
Gorgonzola?
Gorgonzola. It was the Gorgonzola. He's the vegan's worst enemy.
which is basically... It's a fret cloth and polishing system that is basically just a really...
Gargamel, I think.
Gargamel.
I can look it up.
Do you want to look it up? Look it up.
Yeah, which is basically like, it's just a fret polishing cloth, but it's designed specifically, you don't have to use anything else. You don't have to use any other liquids, anything like that. You can literally use that to buff the frets out. But I'd say if you've got a particularly grimy board, like here, we often quite use a really fine wire wool just to really get in there.
Absolutely. I think that answers the second part of Corey's question. It is completely normal. This happens on
some people. Some people are just more... sweaty than others.
I mean, some people rust strings more than others. People have corrosive sweat.
Talking of strings,
that is actually a thing.
Talking of strings earlier, I was thinking, I really need to restring my guitars. I can't remember the last time I restrung most of them. I play them quite fairly regularly, but my strings just don't ever dull off, I don't think.
That's pretty impressive.
Maybe I've just got a feather touch.
I tend to try and change my strings as little as possible.
It's different for bass, though, isn't it?
Yeah, like, I think so.
See, I like changing bass strings more regularly.
Yeah, the zingy sound. Packham's the same.
Yeah.
Packham was the same.
No. He's not dead. I'm going round to it.
He is to me.
I'm going round to his house after we finish this, so I know he's not dead, don't I?
Yeah, he's helping me edit this tomorrow morning.
Right.
especially for punk and things like that. Zingy strings, I guess, are preferred. Right.
It was Gargamel.
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 But Gorgomite.
Yeah,
Gorgomite. It's his mate. Yes, his mate. He polishes frets.
Yeah. He like tries to destroy the Smurfs.
But you should buy it purely for the packaging alone, because the packaging is straight out of Guitar Player magazine, 1983.
Immense. Paul on the Facebook group says, question for the podcast and my fellow nerds. Given that no one knew that the 59 and 60 Les Pauls were going to be the classic Gibsons, and just 20, 30 years later, similarly with various classic years of 50s and 60s Strats, which modern brands, models could become the million-dollar guitar of the future? What could we buy now cheap to stash away for the future?
Do you know what? I saw this question and I was thinking about it a lot. I don't think there is another one. I think that time's passed.
I think crucially, you kind of have to remember that this time isn't the same as then, just 20, 30 years in the future. That was the inception. That was the beginning.
They reckon that they made, between 58 and 60, they made something like 1,100 Les Pauls. You think that...
Is that it?
Yeah, I think so. Something like that. I think it wasn't much.
Jeez Louise.
I don't think it was much. Because the output of the factory now is, what, 50 a day?
Of what, the custom shop?
Of like, American standards. Because that's all they were at the time.
550.
A day?
Yeah.
So there's too many guitars out there for, I think, personally, for something to become collectible.
Well, I mean, you say that. It kind of depends, because remember that first run... those first run Joe Bonamassa's.
Well, I suppose actually, like, yeah, the Billy Gibbons aged and signed. I suppose, well, you've got to get a name behind
there
it.
There are going to be those on there, super limited edition things.
Well, not even super limited edition. What about the Billy Joe Armstrongs? You know, those Billy Joe Armstrongs single cut Les Paul Juniors.
Yeah.
They were like 600 quid,
yeah.
700 quid or something. And now you can, like, I sometimes see them going on Gumtree for like £1,400.
Yeah, I suppose it's
like, what's going on?
I suppose it's weird though, because, you know, for the price that I paid for my SG Junior, you'd think, oh God, you'd hear 61 and you'd hear Gibson and you'd think, oh, it must be like tens of thousands, and it was actually like really, really reasonable, and it's just because of the actual spec of it. And I think, yeah, there's definitely going to be some limited ones out there, but, you know, from a standard strap point of view, it's like, no, I mean, you know, if we knew, I think we would have bought the ball.
Yeah. I mean, there are some things that I think could be. There are some things that I missed first time around, even only going back a decade, 15 years. But, I mean, my first proper bass, like, you know, I had Epiphones or OLPs or Squires, things like that before. But the first time I invested a wedge of money in a bass was... on a Japanese 51 reissue precision bass, because it was the bass on the front cover of Fender Basses Through the Ages, a book that I bought, and Fender Japan made it, and I thought, well, I absolutely have to get that. It didn't come with the covers, the ashtray covers, but that was okay. And I picked one up that had been dropped in my local Hooters guitar store. One of the tuners was a little wonky. I picked it up for 400 quid with butterscotch, with the single ply black scratch, matte black scratch, coolest bass ever. I sold that a couple of years later, when I started getting into six string bass, for a very brief period of time. And I sold it for what I paid for it, for £400. Now, if you see one going on any of the various secondhand outlets, they go for around 900 quid. And I mean, that's, you know, that's with only sort of 15 years in it, and that's not even, that was a standard Japanese model, import model.
I think pedals are the one, really.
I was going to say exactly the same thing.
I think there's a case of, well, I mean, still old pedals, but I think more stuff like, really, only from the early 90s, like the first run of boutique stuff where people definitely didn't want to spend 200 quid on a pedal, that now people are, you know, like we said before, don't blink an eye at it.
No.
But those pedals, like all the early way huge stuff, like he did some pedals that, you know, are so rare, so limited. He wired all, well, the Klon, I suppose that's the thing to take, isn't it? The guy built, he reckons, Bill Finnegan reckons he made 8,000 from 1994 to 2001, and he made every single one and tested every single component. And you know, they go, and at the time they were $300, and you could, you know, now they go for 1,500. So I definitely think there's probably more pedals out there that are probably going to be future collectibles, but what they are, I don't know yet. But
yeah, certainly. I guess there are a few boutique companies, people like Zvex and stuff.
I think now it's more about buying limited run stuff, mm-hmm. than it is about buying a guitar that you think might because they, you know, they make too many American standards for it to be, you know, something that's going to be really collectible in the future.
I mean, I think something any from either of the custom shops is always going to is going to hold its value at the very least. But I think if we're talking about new standard cheaper models that you can buy now that are going to inflate in value, I don't know if there is going to be anything that's going to absolutely smash it. Right, so our answer to that question is that we can't really think of an answer to that question, which is very helpful. Next up, Josh, and this is a base-related question, but I'm sure you
do. We have anyone
help
for base-related queries?
We don't have any base-related queries.
For base-related queries.
In fact, I know quite a lot about... Okay, cool, hit me.
Okay, so...
American Standard P-Base.
That Drew is
Blues
the answer.
Jr. Right, cool. Yeah, Drew Blues Jr.
Jay, here for base-related queries. Josh on Facebook says, base people, how do you get a good bass... Oh, God, you definitely can't answer this.
I can answer this.
How do you get a good bass tone when your only option is to go through a DI? Sans amp?
Yes.
Any alternatives that are cheap and not crap?
I mean, we're going to butt heads on this. I really like the Sans amp. And I know you really like it as a drive pedal and you don't like it as a DI pedal. I think it sounds great as a DI pedal.
If you like a drivey sound.
Yes.
My problem with them is they don't clean up.
Okay.
And I don't like the preconception that they are a replacement for an amplifier because amps can be clean.
Yeah, I know. But if your option, if your only option is the DI...
Yes, true. On a DI front, I think they're very good. I do think the MXR M81.
M80,
they do an M80 as well, which is exactly the same. Still DI, but
without the drive.
With no drive.
Yeah.
That gives you all the options that the Sans amp does, but you can crucially bring in and out that drive, which I think makes it...
Yeah, I mean, that is a very nice nice feature. And I've not just had this conversation with you, I've had it with a bunch of people. I still stand firm with the Sans amp because I just think it sounds great.
Well, I mean, millions of people agree with you. The Sans amp bass driver must be the most popular,
bass pedal
preamp. Yeah, pedal.
Yeah,
of,
I'd say
of
bass
all
pedal.
Time.
Yeah,
definitely.
And, after after
and,
T3,
and it's £200. It's £200. It's the most popular.
Yeah.
We talk about people only recently getting used to the fact that. Or being willing to drop more than 150 quid on a pedal. Bass players have always been doing it because that's the pedal that most people own. The other things they do are the VT series and the Sans amp.
The VT bass I think is really cool as well. I used one of those to record with when I didn't need the DI. I did just need it as the drive pedal.
They're very good. And crucially, I think the newest thing on the block is the Boss bass driver.
Yeah, but there's no DI on
there
it.
There is a DI.
There's no XLR DI.
Oh, it's balanced, so you can go jack to XLR.
Have we had those yet?
Yeah.
Are they here?
We've gone. Yeah, in fact, we definitely have because Mark Packham did a video demo.
Oh, did he? Okay, yeah. I've not heard
that
yet.
I was watching it back today in half speed. Oh, if you are a user of Google Chrome as your internet browser of choice, then I strongly recommend going onto YouTube, going onto the GAC Vision YouTube page, selecting the video of Mark Packham demoing the Boss bass driver and setting the speed to halftime, which you can do only on Google Chrome browser.
Only on Chrome?
Yeah, only on Chrome.
Weird.
Yeah. I mean, there might be some others, but you can't do it on Safari and you can't do it on...
You shouldn't really be using it.
But yes, watch
other
it on
browsers half speed are available,
because,
but don't use them.
Because Mark Packham sounds like he's drunk, which is incredibly funny to watch. I enjoyed it greatly. Okay, cool. Josh, I hope that answers your question. Next up is not so much a question, but I've noticed on the Facebook group recently, we've had a few posts by people mentioning brands like Italia, things that fall into that kind of 60s category of weird and wacky, often very Perloid looking guitars. And I thought maybe we should talk a bit about what we have in that area. What our favourite examples are of that sort of thing, the sort of Dan Electro, Italia end of the market.
I mean, I was going to say, like, Dan Electro is a really good choice. And I don't know if it's a current model, but for a while they did the Wild Thing, which was the entire...
Completely Paisley.
Which was Paisley neck, Paisley body, Paisley fretboard.
Paisley fretboard, yeah.
Paisley fretboard. It was so good. It looked like it was wrapped in Christmas paper.
But then they did like the Dead-On... Is it the Dead-On 67 in the Blue Alligator? Which is really cool. Like, they're definitely one of the most, like, unconventional.
I mean, I still like the DC-59s. Yeah. You know, I mean,
Go Go Blue.
I mean, they are a piece of crap, but that's the point of them. Yeah, like, I had one, and I loved it.
What's the name of the wood? Masonite.
I think it's wood.
Yeah, yeah.
Composite. Yeah, yeah. I think it's Masonite.
I mean, they feel like plastic. They look ridiculous.
The tone controls are very lightweight,
but it sounds great. It sounds so good.
They sound really good.
The only thing that I have one, and I changed the tuners for a set of Grovers.
That is the biggest thing.
And I think it made the world of difference,
especially on their basses, because of course they still use those button tuners on the basses.
Oh, really?
Which are a touch of an issue, not too much, but like, if you dig in, you're gonna slip a little bit. But I mean, in testament to Dan Electro at the moment, I recently got out a Dan Electro Longhorn bass to shoot a bass demo on it, and I used to own an old one. And I thought the new ones were a lot more lightweight, and they looked as if, I mean, they are substantially cheaper than the price I paid for my old one, but they looked as if they weren't really the build quality of the old ones. I wasn't looking forward to doing the video demo. If you check the comments in that video demo, bear in mind I'm just going through an Orange Bass Terror, it's loads of people saying how ugly they think the Longhorn is, which I think it's gorgeous, but then saying that they can't believe how good it sounds. For something that's just a pair of lipstick pickups and composite.
Is that
wood.
The one that looks like an onion?
Yes, that is exactly the one.
Fat Mike still uses one, doesn't he?
No, he doesn't use a Longhorn. He uses a 59, but
he has
a long scale 59, which doesn't exist.
So. Right. Okay.
So he's had his made for him. I mean, other brands that do that sort of thing. I'm thinking like Vox and Burns as well. Vox have recently reintroduced the Phantom and the Teardrop as well.
And what was the one that they did? Was it the Apache they did for a couple of years that had the built-in drum
machine?
Who doesn't
need a built-in drum machine in their guitar? I don't know why that's not standard in Strats and Teles.
There was a video of that, I think, of maybe me playing it and you freestyling over the top or something.
There was a video of Dan Grace who got the guitar, turned the drum machine up on full speed and then smashed out some Ramones over the top of it.
That was great.
Which was amazing.
And they were cool. On the Italia side of things, they do some very, very cool, very weird stuff. I really like the Rimini, which is the 12s. Well, I mean, they do a 12 and they do a 6, but it's like a Rickenbacker.
Yeah, exactly. They do a bass version as well, which is definitely the most reasonable price you can pay for a kind of Ricky copy. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I don't think we can say that, can we? Yeah. No. An R-style bass.
Yeah.
Amazing. We're going to get sued. those things are called, there was the Marinello?
Marinello,
I think is the other one. And I've got a, on order for someone at the moment, they do a resonator, which looks great. And
really?
I didn't know that. Yeah, it's really reasonably priced as well. I can't remember what it's called, but I've got one on order for someone. The problem is that because these things are... are relatively niche. Well, it actually works both ways. They're relatively niche, so they're quite difficult to get a hold of, and they're usually made to order. But the plus side is, you know, it is made to order, so you're getting an instrument that, you know, isn't something that's just been sort of sitting there for a while. You know, they've made it for you, and there it is. So you might be waiting 6-8 weeks for it, but you're getting something banging, like, for not very much money. I mean, you know... It's a toss-up between these things, but I think like some of that Italian stuff I think is very cool.
I agree. I mean, what I love about this kind of end of the market is the freedom to just try weird and wacky stuff.
Yeah.
On the Italia front, they once released a solid body P-style bass in a leatherette wrap, a bright blue leatherette wrap on the front with a completely pearl body on the back.
Yeah.
And the pickup was 4 lipstick pickups on their ends.
Yeah.
So you had a whole lipstick pickup stretching.
Per string, yeah, I remember that.
But then they cascaded them in an angle down the body. So in the same way that you think a precision pickup is split, these gradually diagonally went down across. It was the strangest looking bass, but probably the best 400-500 quid you could spend.
Jeez Louise.
They were cool. I remember that.
Cool. Right. Okay, next question. We've got Jack on the Facebook group. They're all on the Facebook group. I don't know why I said that. It says, as other woods are becoming more and more scarce, Paulowena. Am I pronouncing that right?
Paulowena?
Paulowena. Paulo. Wiener, Paula Wiener, is becoming a more viable option for guitar tonewoods. But how does it sound? He goes on to say, has anyone ever used one before? Anyone a fan? Anyone hate it? What do you guys think? You ever come across Paolo Wino?
No, I mean, to be honest, I think the weirdest bass, the weirdest words are the ones you get on basses. Wenge.
Really? Yeah, Wenge, Babinga, Jatoba.
I think Jatoba? They just made come up.
Jatoba, yeah.
Jatoba, yeah.
Jatoba, Babinga, Wenge.
They sound like just weird months.
Yeah. Oh, Vankol.
Terrible Vankol Wenge weather we're having.
Unbelievable. Koa.
Koa is a trademark. Do you know that?
No.
Koa is a trademark of Hawaii. Yeah, it's the only place in the world that it grows.
Quarter of a million dollars per log.
Really?
So, yeah, it's a lot of money. So the thing is that it only grows in Hawaii because of the like the geographical location of it, and koa only grows above a certain altitude as well. So it's like the fact that it's really high up, and it's positioned where it is, and that the trees move a lot, which is why you get those, you know, the really like interesting looking flame on it. Mm. And it's just an incredibly expensive wood. But yeah, they have Hawaii have trademarked it. I think there was something similar in Ethiopia. I think there might be a single koa forest in Ethiopia as well, but I'm not sure they can call it koa. I believe I might be wrong on that, but I'm sure that's something that I've read while I was, you know, when you this is the sort of thing that you do when you're on the train on the way to work.
The weird thing is about tonal woods on guitars is, on the classic models, which is where you'd see it most, when they've tried using different woods, people aren't interested.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we had the Empress Wood Telly here.
Man, that amazing. Guitar was incredible. Oh,
my guitarist plays an Empress Wood Telly.
Does he?
It's virtually weightless.
They don't weigh a thing. It was beautiful.
It's a Chinese wood, I think.
Right, okay.
Rightly.
Is it? It's a Japanese telly. There was an old series of 80s, 60s, bound telecast.
Really? Is that what it is?
Oh, wow, cool.
Because they did some for the Telebration series in...
Oh, did they?
Yeah. But in 2012. I can't remember if the Telebration was... I guess it was 2012 because it was celebrating the anniversary of either the 51 or the 52, and I can't remember which one it was. I think it was probably the 52.
The weird thing is like we've had, you know, like I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, like the Smartwood series on guitars, Gibsons, you know, and they were trying these things, but people like,
well, Gibson, not Gibson got a mahogany released body a series made out of rock, didn't they?
No, it was just a rock like top. It was like an image.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay, right.
Although actually, there was a guitar company in the 80s when all the weird stuff happened with musical instruments where it was basically made from a weird composite wood, so it's super light, but it had a huge cutout in the back where you inserted different tone blocks.
Yeah,
so you can insert like a really heavy block of plastic or like a big block of wood.
Gold.
Or like a block of... They've made all these
where
blocks.
Where can you buy a block of...
purest gold. Honey... Go to the British Mint and be
plutonium.
Like,
can you get me some plutonium?
That was a genuine thing.
You don't see enough plexiglass anymore, really. No. Dan Armstrong.
Or you could go down the route of some companies that they just do completely bodiless guitars. There's one called the Gitler. That's just the neck.
What?
The Gitler.
I mean,
the Gitler.
It's made of aircraft aluminium, and it's just a neck. Basically,
well, you've got electric guitar company who do all aluminium.
They
are
heavyweight
guitars.
They're heavy, man.
Heavy, dude.
They do actually a range of plexiglass bodies as well.
Do they?
With aluminium necks, which I imagine must weigh a metric.
That must be ridiculous, though, because we've had a few Dan Armstrongs through second hand, and every time one comes through, I'm like, I just need to buy this guitar.
Have you never owned one?
No,
I think everyone. Everyone's owned one at some point.
I really want one just to sort of... I mean, even if I just buy it and then take a photo of myself in it so I can, like, live out all my Greg Ginn fantasies at home by myself.
The headstocks looked rubbish, though. That was their problem.
Such a cool guitar. They sounded so good, though. Like, such great guitars.
Yeah, they were cool. Well, in summary of that, is what I understand from Paolo Wiener, is that it's kind of an alder-esque wood with a similar sort of grain as well, so you can get away with burst tops and things like that. But I think we're yet to see it. It is definitely a cheaper wood to source. I understand that it's from a wood source that takes a relatively short time to grow and is very easy to sustain. So I imagine we'll start to see more and more of it as more things are sort of fading into...
Carbon footprint, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Reduce it.
So we will see. Right, next question. Will says, right, I've got 400... I should have done all of these in city voices, shouldn't
I? Well, it depends on whether you're going to be taking yourself seriously or not.
Well, I was sort of trying to do a Mark Packham. I'm going to go for a city voice. Right, I've got £450 to spend on any gear. Guitars, FX, amps, anything. What do I get? I'm pretty sure I want an ME80, so maybe what do I do with the remaining £231?
Do you need an amp? That's the question.
That is a good question.
Because an ME80 is awesome, and you could just plug straight into headphones.
So he's got £231.
How much are some Dr. Dre Beats?
But then you've got nothing to hear the ME80 through. You just plug in headphones into an ME80 and just turning up the oscillation on a delay. Just doing that, just listening to that. I mean, that's what I do on a daily basis anyway. Yeah. I mean, I don't really know.
I mean,
he said anything, so I assume he is geared
this
up.
This is to not subsidise, supplement yeah, any exactly. any further... any existing gear.
Quid.
I mean, I kind of think, you know, I know what you say about an amp, but if you've got everything, I think an additional amp is the most boring additional thing you can buy.
I guess I'm not sure that's completely true. It depends on whether you can use it to turn your rig into a stereo rig.
Oh my god, I can't believe I'm hearing that from you.
The day I see J Cross use two amps, it's when there's two J Crosses and I'm in a parallel universe and they're both playing the same gig at the same time.
You put on my glasses by mistake. You're like, oh, there's two of you.
I don't know. ME80, I'm just thinking of trying to think of a really cool guitar for £231 that's
I mean, I'd buy a Vaporizer.
I tell you what you should get for £231 if you want like another just thing to knock about. Squire Cabernet with Bigsby.
I think that was actually suggested
they're
on the group.
They're a little over the top. They're a little over that budget, I think, though.
No. Are they you can get the one without the Bigsby, and that's £240.
Yeah, but get it with the Bigsby. Yeah, get it with the Bigsby.
Restringing is a nightmare.
Yeah, but like... you don't have to restring it. You don't have to use it all the time.
Yeah,
like,
true.
It's fun to have a guitar with a Bigsby.
True. You know, you
J
could
Cross,
get...
it's fun to have a guitar with a Bigsby.
Quote.
You could get everything for in that if you bought one of our Slash pack outfits.
Yeah, there's that as well.
There is that.
Yeah. Actually, do you know what?
Are you just looking at what's closest to you?
Yeah, I was. Yeah,
there's really like into an the guitar. Thing.
Yeah, okay.
Because
for,
they've got
I didn't
an inbuilt
really,
tuner in, the, yeah, in the pickup ring.
Epiphone have released a Les Paul Junior style thing. It's a Slash signature model, which does have a tuner built into the pickup.
What about don't buy the ME80 and instead of spending £450 on some stuff, spend £399 on a Marshall fridge.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
I talked over you, sorry.
We do stop Marshall
fridges. Hold on, stop it. I reckon... what we could do is spend £399 and buy a Marshall fridge. Now edit that in place of what Jay just said.
I'll do exactly that. Okay, cool. Next question. Chris, this is specifically angled at yourself, Mr. Knight.
Oh, I'll go.
Matt Nitro.
Yes, you might as well Matt go through yourself out or something, Jay. Right, Chris says, how does the full-tone MDV1 stack up against the Vibe on the Mobius, Matt Knight? I'm trying to weigh up whether to get one or not, but have nowhere I can try the full tone. Trying to establish if there's quite a big difference.
And we had a little bit of a conversation about this in regards to... so the Mobius is probably the best like modulation multi-effects unit out there in terms of quality.
Absolutely.
And in terms of like the sound. So what you get in there is something with a little bit more control, some really great effects, some really great sounds. But when you go for like an analog bit of kit like the full tone, you've got that kind of... that warmth that you just can't replicate digitally. Like, I suppose, like when we were talking about amps earlier, and you know, you've got valve amps and digital amps, and they both have their like plus sides, but there's just something you can't quite capture on, on digital. But I suppose the end of the day is how much room have you got in your pedalboard?
No, that's it.
Because the thing is, if you're really going to use Univibe more than anything, and you're never going to use all the other effects it gives you, like tremolo and phaser and flanger, then buy the individual one. Because if that's what I did, and that works quite well for me. But if I, you know, if I could, I'd have a Mobius and have chorus and all those other effects as well. But yeah, you get a slightly richer, maybe more organic sound, I suppose, from having the full tone.
And
but
for me,
I think for me, I'd always go for the Mobius because I like having the overall control. I like having more control over my sound and doing something a bit more wacky with it.
Craig says, what would the ultimate touring guitar amp be? Preferably a head and cab, so I can share cabs at some shows. I'm looking for something that drives really well, but that can clean up if I need it to. I'm not fussed on brand, wattage, or even what cab. It just needs to be the best and most rugged combination anyone can think of. Valve, preferably.
That's quite a good one, actually. Mm. Especially if it's not fussed on brand or...
Yeah, so I guess we can think of any... We've got to think of what the best size cab is for touring, and I think probably portability comes in.
Do you know what I would say in terms of head? Mark V M25 Mini. It's got to be the ultimate touring amp.
He hasn't mentioned anything about pricing. How much is the 525? As soon as anyone says...
1279?
I was going to say, if you've got no upper price limit, I would say Mark V.
I mean, the thing is, he did say touring amp, and I just don't know if a Messer is that, just because they're so much money. I mean, a touring amp, I take as well, something that's what that needs to be beat up.
Because I think I would have said the Mark V, but I went for the Mini purely because of price, and it's got the cab simulator on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the Mark V is... I mean, the Mark V, I think, is the single best amplifier on the market at the moment. You know, in terms of versatility, in terms of usability, you know, you look at it, you're like, oh my sweet lord, there's so much going on here.
But is it a touring amp or is it a studio amp?
I think it's touring because what he hasn't specified is...
Just don't drop it.
What he hasn't specified is sort of really...
Price.
He's just said he wants something that drives really well but can clean up. And we did the demo of the Mini one, and I mean, look at the range of sounds that we got.
In terms of usability and like what most people can go for, I think the Mini is the way forward. I think they're great amps. But with the full whack Mark V, you've got three channels. Each channel is switchable between 10 to 45
to 90,
watts. You've got reverb that you can turn on and off for each channel. You've got switchable effects loop for each channel. You've got three different voicings for each channel. And all of this, you're going, bloody hell, that's so much stuff. But actually, you just look at it and you're like, oh yeah, it makes complete sense.
Oh yeah, they're incredibly well laid out. I completely agree.
But then the Mini is... I'd probably buy a Mini if it was me.
The features that you lose are kind of the features that I'd be willing to lose.
Absolutely, because it's two channels instead of three channels. It doesn't go to 90 watts. I mean...
Yeah.
Oh, no! I mean, I just like that. I mean, this is funny, really, because we say about price, but actually, if you're looking for a touring rig, head and cab, I mean, yeah, you could go, well, actually, it wants a really good drive sound and a really good clean sound. So,
what cab would you go for if we were talking about the...
I mean, cabs... Do you know what? Orange 412.
Yeah, I mean, same.
You'd definitely go for a 412. See, this is very different from where... I mean, as soon as they said touring, I would immediately be thinking a 212 for transport.
Yeah, I mean, again, it kind of depends on the logistics of the situation. I mean, I think
he says touring to me sounds like they've got a proper van that they can probably take a lot of gear around in.
True.
So, yeah, I mean, I would say Orange 412 or even Orange 212. Really?
I mean, I would say 212 just because a 212 then covers all situations. It means you can tour with it, but also if at the end of the day, if you need to carry it somewhere, you can.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Those PPCs are heavy.
They
amps.
Are incredibly heavy. So maybe not Orange on that front. But
or go
you'd
open
mix
back.
Brands, would you? Yeah.
Go open back.
I've mixed brands. I'll mix it up.
Yeah, I'm not very good at doing that. I'm a little bit fussy in that sense.
Do you know what?
He's very materialistic. He needs everything to look nice.
I mean, the thing is, I would actually say, from recent experience, the Blackstar stuff sounds better with its own cabs. And generally, Boogie sounds really good with its own cabs.
Yeah. I did expect you guys to cite Blackstar kind of off the bat for this. I mean, I was thinking... an open back 212.
I just think when he says touring, I would have said, well, he's got 2.5 brand spend and he wants a rig that's going to be super solid, that's going to be loud but can also do. And that's why I said go for a simple orange amp like a Thunder 100, or go for something more expansive like a Mesa Boogie Mark 5.
Expansive? Like, or expensive?
No, in terms of expansive, in terms of the...
Right, okay,
you did the expansive sound again.
That was good. Good. I liked it. That's the sound of like a decaying reverb.
Yeah, that was.
Or just go down the route of your main man JC over here. Supersonic. Fender Supersonic. They're coming ahead, or you can get the combo.
I suppose the thing is that realistically, anything you buy off the shop floor, you could go and tour with, and it would be wicked. And
yeah, there's an awful lot of stuff. Yeah, but, I mean, even I mean, do you think he's right in looking for a head and cab as two separate things?
Yeah, I think so. Because sometimes, if you know, I mean, one, if you couldn't take the cabs, you were limited to a small five-door estate and you needed to just drive around and put things in the boot, then you might not necessarily be able to take a cab with you. So having a head, you're going to fit more stuff in.
I put on a gig yesterday, and the band who brought the backline, they come from London, did you see the photo I put up on the...
I did, yeah. So
now, as soon as Packham came to the show, and I went, look at that, it's good, isn't it? I mean, yeah, we sell stuff like that, pre-made. I was like, oh, I didn't know that. Apparently we do. There's a Gretsch kit, which you can unhook in the middle and store everything inside, which is quite neat. That's anyway, cool. They, in order to save space, they had... the drummer's dad had a workbench with a full saw on it. And he sawed... He cut down the middle of his amp in one, not amp, bass drum, and then was able to store everything inside. But the guitarist had a PPC, an orange PPC 112, and an orange Dual Terror, and the bassist had a Little Mark 250, and they turned an old PV bass 1x8, I think, practice amp into a cabinet that could take a Little Mark 250. Not only could it take a Little Mark 250, one of the other bands had brought an orange Terabase, 500 Terabase, and they plugged that into that as well.
An 8-inch speaker.
I think it was an 8-inch speaker.
Sounded like a gnat pissing.
It sounded really good, like really surprisingly good. Is that what it sounds like? I mean, it was DI'd as well, so maybe it was just
Maybe the sound guy was like, "I better turn that cab off."
Maybe you just turned DI all the way up. I don't know, but like, you can do it. You can do a small rig easily, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely becoming more of a viable option. Right, that brings us to the end of this week's questions and on to a new feature for Series 2 of the DAK Guitar Shop podcast, which is the podcast competition.
What? I don't know anything about this.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. You can share this podcast on your Facebook page. We put a link straight up on the GAK Facebook wall, so you can share directly from there, or you can tag us in your own post. And we
not
will pick...
us, not us
no,
personally.
No, don't tag us. Don't tag us.
Right. Okay.
Tag the podcast.
Tag Mark.
Tag Mark Packham, and we will we'll pick one listener at random each week, and this person will receive a GAK podcast goodie bag. So good luck. Also, by introducing this at the end of the week, we can find out how many people actually stuck on to this podcast. That's the real meaning behind this. Anyway, that wraps up the podcast for this week. So as always, you can find us on our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group for all your guitar needs. You can also find us on our ordinary Facebook page, facebook.com/GAK music, or on Twitter at GAK_co_UK, or you can find me on Twitter at Yosef_900. Gentlemen, how can people get hold of you, Matt Knight?
You can email me, matt.knight@gak.co.uk, for questions and prices and things, or you can get me on the Facebook group, which is where most people like to talk to me, or you can get me on Twitter, even though I'm yet to change my Twitter handle. It is still currently matt_knight.
I can't believe you've let us down.
That's Matt Nitro.
That's Matt, M-A-T-T-E underscore Nitro, with that's Knight with T-R-O on the end. No, with R-O on the end.
J Cross.
Shoot me an email, j.cross@gak.co.uk, or JAYBM1 on Twitter.
Excellent. Wonderful. Okay, well, thank you everyone for sticking around for this, the first episode in the second series of the a GAK Guitar Shop podcast. I assure you, as we butcher on through this, we will find our feet a little bit more. But thank you very much for sticking around. Cheers. Bye.
Thank
Cheers.
You.
Bye-bye. Bye. Oh, that's what that was. You were headbutting the microphone.
Sorry.
I was a bit concerned for a minute.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's fine.
Right, should we give it a go?
Yeah, yeah, we should.
Are we recording?
Well, I think so.
Good.
My goodness.
Season two.
I would ideally like to get the 8:19 train, which is an hour and 19 minutes away.
We can do an hour.
So we can do an hour, can't we?
Yes. Diazepam. Diazepam.
Do you want a sheet?
Shit.
I am freaking out.